This is The Calling, your guide to leading modern contact centres. On the show, we'll share innovative strategies, expert insights, and success stories from industry leaders across the world. You'll learn everything you need to turn your contact centre into a strategic value centre, where interactions become memorable experiences. I'm Sean McGinn.
And I'm Arnie Hope.
Today, we're talking to John O'Kirk, who is the Executive Director of Supporter Experience at Compassion Australia, a not-for-profit dedicated to lifting children around the world out of poverty. After 13 years with Compassion, John O has a wealth of knowledge about not-for-profit contact centres and is passionate about providing the best experience for his customers and his employees.
In this episode, John O breaks down what it's like running a contact centre for a not-for-profit organisation, and how he's managing customer expectations in the face of a cost of living crisis. He also breaks down all things employee experience, what it is, why it's important, and what he's doing at Compassion to improve employee experience in their contact centers. Let's jump in.
Hello, Jono. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sean. Hi, Arnie. It's great to be with you guys today.
Very good. You're the classic example of a first-time caller, long-time listener.
Yep. First-time caller, long-time listener. I think I know I listened to episode one of the podcast. Whether that was in the same week it came out or not, I'm not sure. Yeah, I've listened to all your episodes so far.
Wonderful. Well, this is going to be a special moment. So, Jono, you're the Executive Director of Supporter Experience at Compassion Australia. Can you tell us a bit about your role?
It's a real privilege to serve in that role with Compassion. Compassion's an international not-for-profit. We work in over 25 developing countries around the world. And my role really is looking at the end-to-end supporter experience. So we have the marketing function that kind of sits in that role, as well as our contact center and our customer experience thinking. So we've got a journeys team in there too. It keeps me out of trouble. And I love each day that I get to come and spend that time thinking about end-to-end experiences for our donors.
So, Jono, can you tell me what it is that Compassion Australia does?
Yeah, sure, Arnie. Compassion's an international holistic child development organization. And through our child sponsorship program, more than 2 million children in 25 countries around the world are being released from poverty. We've been at this for over 70 years. And so it is our desire to have the greatest impact we can. And in Australia, part of that is by raising funds that we're able to send through to the field.
What attracts a donor to Compassion Australia versus any of the other charities they could engage with?
A couple of things. Compassion has been working internationally for over 70 years. And so we've got a long track record of doing holistic child development, releasing children from poverty all around the world for 70 plus years. Compassion is a faith-based organization. We work primarily in the developing world through the local church. It's a stable institution in a lot of those places and enables us to work that way. And I think we're in skeptical times, aren't we? And so that 70 years in trust is a really big thing for us.
Can you take us back to the beginning for you then as well? How did you get started in the whole contact center world?
I'm a high school English teacher by trade, I guess, and didn't teach a day of my life. I don't know why I did that at university. Seemed like a good idea at the time. And from there, I kind of fell into a few different things, more marketing related and event promotion related. And then about 14 years ago, I had an opportunity to dive into the contact center world. First role was on the phones, answering calls. And that was great. I loved it. I loved the fact you could speak to somebody different every couple of minutes, different parts of the country. You kind of had a 5-minute window into their world. So I really enjoyed that, but I couldn't escape the fact that contact centers could be done differently. There are ways at the time in the role I was in, we're a very traditional contact center. We weren't using a whole lot of technology outside of a contact center platform, call platform. And I couldn't escape the thought that maybe we could use SMS and a few other things to do differently, which kind of started that journey into some more operational sides of how we do our work.
And so tell us a bit about Compassion Australia. It's a not-for-profit. And what makes the work you do in the contact center there as a not-for-profit different to other contact centers?
There's a lot of it that's really similar to any contact center. And maybe we'll talk a bit later about the donor psychology and how actually as donors to a charity, we're not scoring a charity's contact center or the experience we have with the charity just against another charity. We're actually comparing that to all of our other business we do as humans. I think what makes it different is we have an opportunity to connect our donors with the impact that's happening around the world. We get the opportunity with every interaction to share real life stories of how their charitable giving is improving the outcomes of children all over our world. One of the highlights for us over the last 12 months has actually been able to launch a second contact center site based out of the Philippines where we do a lot of our work. And the staff in that contact center are graduates from our programs. And so we have supporters who call in and actually ask to speak to these graduates because just naturally in the call, we have a graduate who can share their personal story about how a supporter in Australia has impacted their life by giving the $48 a month. That has what it has meant for someone like a clerk in the Philippines.
That must be so fulfilling for the people that work there. What does that mean for the work that happens in the contact center?
It is fulfilling. I see people who come into our team and they could get jobs in any industry. Many of them are professionally qualified in a range of fields, from police officers to international aid and development masters, but they choose to work in our organization, whether that be in the contact center or they spend time in the contact center and then move into other roles in the organization. And they make that kind of, I guess, personal sacrifice to stay when they could get paid a ton of money somewhere else doing their professional vocation. And each and every day, our contact center staff have these real life stories of impact that they just get to be part of. They get to be a small fly on the wall in hearing these stories.
I think it really resonates because one of the things, you know, that we talk about often is purpose and the importance of purpose for people in doing their work. I'm writing an article at the moment about that concept that, you know, as we go into annual performance review period, you know, people aren't motivated by like necessarily hitting KPIs or these outputs that, you know, we think might impact the system, but they're motivated by things like purpose as well as things like autonomy and mastery. So it's really interesting that you've got that sort of impact in your organization. I want to turn sort of move across to the supporters that you were speaking about before. At the moment, we're in this cost of living crisis with a rise of costs. And I can imagine that, you know, with charitable donations like Compassion Australia, one of the challenges is that one of the first things to go is probably cutting back on charitable giving. Can you tell me a little bit about how you're approaching that challenge?
Before we even get to the cost of living crisis, we've probably seen the emergence of the leisure bucket in the donor's wallet. So charities where they have had a firm place in Australian society and it's built into our DNA in Australia to kind of band together and give, charities are starting to fall into that place in the wallet that often is competing with Netflix or Spotify as well, that leisure giving, the nice to haves. And then cost of living comes along and also that part of the wallet is taken up by, do I get Uber Eats this Friday night or not? It's a real challenge for charities right now in Australia. We need to be really, really adept at our storytelling. That's really, really important. Right now, 345 million people around the world are actually facing a hunger crisis, some of which live in the countries where Compassion works. Some of them live in other countries such as the Ukraine. We've seen global climate events and war events that have contributed to that. And so when it comes to being a charity, we've got to get really, really sharp at actually how do we make it real in a way that a donor, they don't just turn the newspaper over, they're engaged with that story and we make it small enough that they can actually do something. So whether that's for $50, you can actually provide food security for a family of four to six for a month. That's the important thing for a charity in a season like we're in. how do we tell the story in a way that's real and in a way that actually gives the supporter something tangible that they can do? There's a whole bunch of other tactics that we would look at in our contact center. First and foremost, you need to have empathy, don't you? Australians are finding the cost of living hard. How do we bring together empathy and the story and provide maybe even smaller price point products for people to engage in?
Another question around some of the challenges you face. We know one of the big challenges you face is around what people think of not-for-profits and how they should run. The idea that you're a not-for-profit and so you should be operating cheaply, but still providing the same level of service as any other for-profit organization. Can you tell us a bit about how you deal with that challenge?
Customers don't see a difference, really. We do. In our minds, we do see, oh, this is a charity. But when it comes down to it, Friday lunch, I've got to do some life admin this week. I've got to call my insurance provider to make some changes to make sure that all my kids are on the account. I've got to pay my water bill. And then I've actually got to contact Compassion to get my tax receipt. And I'm going to do all of those things within half an hour because that's as long as I've got for my lunch break. And so I'm actually not comparing my service or my experience with Compassion against maybe the one or two other not-for-profits that I deal with. I'm comparing it to my water provider and I'm comparing it to the big insurance agency who sells me insurance. So there's a real change in psychology there. We're now competing with the big boys, shall we say. We have to take what we have and we need to steward it well. I talk about with our team, how do we maximize the use of the tools and technology that we have? I have the privilege of going to conferences sometimes and you meet a whole bunch of people who want to sell you the next latest thing that's going to increase your productivity by 10% or a new chatbot that's going to do this for you and sell you the kitchen sink. Ultimately, I love technology. I love new technology. My team will tell you that. I'm the first to kind of pull it open and pull it apart and see what it can do for the business. But when it comes down to it, as a not-for-profit, we want to make sure the tools we have are being maximized to their full potential. Sometimes that's going to mean we don't only take it to 100% of its usage, but we're looking at where's that extra 10%? Can we hack something out of the tools we have to get that extra 10% of value before we go and invest a whole lot more money to bring in new things? We can get really caught up with the shiny, and shiny is good. But as a not-for-profit, as customer expectations do change and they are expecting big things, my first starting point is how do we maximize the tools we have? The other one alongside that is, how do we leverage our people? When it comes to our biggest advocacy arm for a not-for-profit, our biggest selling point, it's those people, and we talked about it earlier, who have purpose in their jobs. And so how do we utilize and really engage our people so deep that they provide amazing experiences as well?
Jono, do you have an example of how you've been able to get more out of your technology optimization?
We've actually moved to fully automating our quality assurance in our contact center. We're utilizing some of the technology that we have already that looks at sentiment and call speeds. And we actually put one of our staff on a sprint project there and they turned it into a way that we can, with a level of accuracy, fully automate our quality assurance program. Does it mean our team leaders still score calls? Yeah, they do. But 100% of our calls are scored and then calibrated against the technology. And it's meant that, pulled out the old business case a few weeks ago, and I think at the time I'd pitched to the executive team, I wasn't on the executive at the time, that we'd save ourselves 4 days worth of work a week. And I reckon we'd probably save equivalent of 2 weeks worth of work every week by moving along here. And that's been a real win for us because we just don't have the time to deliver that level of call scoring in a small contact center.
So one of the things we've heard a lot in recent times is obviously about customer experience, but I also know that you guys are doing some exciting stuff at Compassion Australia around employee experience. So we'd love to hear more about it. But firstly, what is employee experience?
Employee experience to me comes down to culture. It's creating a culture where staff feel like they have a voice, they feel empowered, and they feel like they actually can deliver value to the experiences they create. They feel like their work has impact. And so I love the Drucker quote that culture eats strategy for breakfast every time. And that's something we've tried to embed within our contact center at Compassion.
Expanding more on employee experience, why is it so important?
In my 14, 15 years working in the customer experience field, I've never seen a war on talent like we have today. So if you have a contact center that actually isn't focusing on experience, no matter how great the purpose is, no matter how great the impact is, right now, people are going to go where the experience is best. And so I've often heard leaders in other organizations talk about the cost of employee experience. I want to say back to that, the cost of not doing anything about the experience is so much greater in the long run. For me, it's really about bringing it back to culture. How do we create a culture where those employees are feeling like, not just feeling like, but actually participating in the experience? One of the things we talk about is actually every single one of us in this organization owns the experience. It's not just up to a leader to create it, but every single one of us owns the experience. And so what is your personal responsibility you're going to take on that experience? And for me as a leader, that is thinking about how do I create that empowered culture for those who work with me.
Can you give us an example of what exactly you guys are doing to improve experience for your employees?
I do want to pick up on that person in charge, because I think my first opportunity to manage a team, that was me. I stepped into a role. I tried to be the leader I thought I needed to be, which happened to be the person in charge. And it wasn't authentic to who I was. I learned a lot of hard lessons along the way. I didn't lead my staff well. And I've got the scars to go with that, the leadership scars to go with that. And I needed to learn some hard lessons through failure and good failure. Failure can be good. Actually take a step back and really start to lead from a place of authenticity. And that really is being a leader who empowers others and doesn't have to know everything, doesn't need to have all the answers, doesn't need to be ultimately the shot caller, a real place, more of a servant leadership style of leader. There's a moment in The West Wing towards the end where you've got the two main characters in the final season. Arnie Vinnick asks the president-to-be, what happens if we disagree? And he says, well, I'll give you every opportunity to set me straight. And at the end, we'll make a decision. I expect you to go out and sell the decision. I hope my leadership style is the latter. I hope that, and I keep working towards that in terms of how I lead, because I don't have all the answers. And so what does that mean for our team? What does that mean for our contact center and what we've done and continue to do? Well, we work really, really hard to continue to hear our staff voice. One of the things that we did a lot going through COVID and then coming out of COVID was different ways of catching up and hearing from the frontline team members. And as we did that, I'd be asking myself, well, what can I change in 3 days? What can I change in 3 weeks? And what can I change in 3 months? It's the 3-3-3. And I had that written down because as a leader, whenever you do catch ups with your staff and you're asking for their feedback, they're wanting to see proof and they're wanting to see it quite quickly. And so 3 days was always important. How do I deliver something and get something turned around within 3 days? 3 weeks, that's that midterm, right? And then 3 months, that shows that I'm still interested in the meeting that we had 3 months ago and affecting lasting change. In all honesty, bringing in value and value demand into our center was a big part of our employee experience. There's nothing more disheartening as a specialist on the phones than dealing with the same inquiry over and over and over again and feeling like the business just doesn't listen or understand.
Our listeners may not know what failure and value demand is. You know exactly what it's about. Do you want to just sort of define it for our listeners?
Failure demand is really those interactions that are repetitive, that aren't delivering value to our customer. It could be, I'm struggling to log into your My Account. And every business will have those inquiries every day. It's failure demand if you're not doing anything about it. Whereas the value demand inquiry, and I love these as a not-for-profit, it's not just about financial value, but it's about how does one of our specialists on the phone have an interaction of value with our customer, with our donor. So it actually could be telling them about a story of a project where they sponsor a child. It could be helping them write their first letter to their sponsor child. So value demand really is, how do we have that moment of value with the customer? It could be financial, could be non-financial, could be both. I would almost suggest that value demand is actually in those one-to-one moments, those moments where you actually have human-to-human interaction and value exchange can take place. You could automate to your heart's content, but that moment of value, humanly speaking, we want to have with another human being.
That's great. I love that you talk about failure demand and employee experience together, because that's the mission Anani and I have been on, is to try and demystify this concept of failure demand, because the benefits of it are greater than just reducing calls. It has a very pervasive way of finding its way into the employee experience and really every corner of your operation. And so it's great that you've found that. We're really happy to hear that, because it is such a powerful concept. And your definitions are fantastic as well. I think you're actually taking it to the next level.
One of those things that we did is we actually looked at, how do we route those moments of celebration in our contact center outside of our contact center? So we have a celebrating wins feed on our organizational channel. So every time there was that value demand of a child sponsorship being re-engaged, that was celebrated, not just in the contact center, but that was actually then highlighted across the whole organization. And so it didn't just celebrate the value in our contact center, but it lifted the profile of our contact center in our organization. And so the other kind of thing there for us was moving that contact center from a place of a cost center to the organization to a real value centerpiece. And what that has meant for us is, our contact center guys are rock stars in our organization. People love engaging with them, and they started to understand the types of value a contact center frontline agent can deliver in other parts of the organization as well.
Let's keep following the thread of employee experience and tell us about, other than the benefits of failure demand, what are some of the other benefits of improving the employee experience?
I talk a lot about fun. I want the teams that I lead to really feel like they can have fun in their workplace. And that's not just a case of having a fun budget and hiring somebody in, or even buying the latest tool for a contact center to have fun in their day-to-day work, or gamification. It's actually about, how do you create that culture where your team organically feel like they own the fun they can create? So our contact center organizes their own virtual trivia nights, not on work time, because they're all based around Australia. And that's great. It's creating those moments of fun. And then as a leader, visibility is key there. So I've realized, for me to stay connected really well to our frontline staff, it's actually, how do I create some moments of mayhem where I don't just wander through and wave to people, but I get involved in what they're doing, or I distract them to the point where our head of contact center tells me it's time for me to leave. He lets it go enough to know I've had fun, and then he tells me it's time to disappear. So fun's a really big part of that. In not-for-profit world, it's a serious business, but in any business world, it's a serious business. Most people have KPIs, whether they're working fully agile or not. They have expectations from their managers or their executive teams to hit. And I'm not saying we remove those. I'm saying you actually achieve those more easily when you create a culture of fun alongside it.
And I like what you said about the fun being organic, because a lot of contact centers impose fun, or this idea of fun, on their teams. I think it's actually a way to distract them from some of the things that aren't going so well. So I think that, yeah, fundamentally the fun people have at work, it's got to actually be driven by them. Otherwise it ends up being a little bit like an adult kindergarten at times, which are not the most fun places to be.
That's right. The other thing too is controlled within reason risks. Famously, I switched one of our dialers on a few years ago with the comment, what could go wrong, on a campaign that wasn't really set up, but we'll just experiment and try something. A lot could go wrong. I learned very quickly, but I was the first to throw my hands up, and we tell the funny story to this day. When it comes down to it, a lot of what we do in the contact center world is process documented. It has a defined outcome. And so when you do spot a moment to just throw out the rules and try something, providing you're kind of hitting your compliance boxes, just do it.
We've got two questions that we ask all of our guests to wrap us up. If you could change one thing about the contact center industry, what would it be?
So the first contact center I ever walked into was a floor full of agents in a glass box within a wider building. So they're all in sort of like a fishbowl, shall we say. And my first thought, it was very traditional contact center. My first thought was, gosh, this is one big science experiment. You've put a whole large group of people on a schedule in the same room. Everything is time-tracked. Everything is monitored. They've all got the same KPIs that focus on speed and efficiency. Look, honestly, July's going to come around. They're all going to get sick and the business is going to have a problem. But it was less about everyone being in a glass box and the way it was operating. And I had to think there's a better way. There's a better way to do this. The team, I don't think, were highly engaged. I'm all for efficient operations. But when we set up a contact center using those really traditional, rigorous, how do we get through the most number of calls in a two-minute period, I feel like you lose sight of the customer and they just become a number on the other side. So I want to flip that around. I want to say, what does it look like for us to be truly customer-centric first? Because if we do that, we'll nail the operational side.
I love the answer. I think you've encapsulated it. And it's that quest to find another way, I think, that a lot of contact center leaders grapple with, is that they feel, like you genuinely feel that the model that they've been given to run contact centers doesn't feel right. There's something about it that just doesn't feel right, whether it's the quest for this efficiency or the way that it can take the human side away from the way teams work. I think that quest is something lots of contact center leaders are on, but they just don't necessarily know how to rephrase the question like you just have there. Well, what would it mean to be really customer centric, or what would it mean to be put the employee experience first? Just different ways of asking questions to see what comes out of it, I think is a brilliant way to look at it. So I think you nailed that question.
The one extra thing I would say to that is, when it comes to rephrasing that question, for me, I then start to think about, how do we resource differently? And resourcing differently means, rather than resourcing with human capacity towards those repeatable tasks that really should be automated, I want to use my human resource in areas that are messy, that are complex, and deliver the most value for a customer.
And that's a pretty good segue into our last question for you, which, if you had a crystal ball, what do you think the future of contact centers looks like?
I'm excited about the future of contact centers. I think technology is moving so fast that in 5 or 10 years' time, we're going to be able to jump and take care of a lot of those repeatable tasks that can be automated. And we're going to be able to utilize our human resource better than ever before. If I think about the future of contact centers, I think we're going to have contact centers that are, they can't not care about purpose and impact, because if they do, the employees won't work for them. We're going to have contact centers that have to be digital savvy, meaning they're going to have to know how to deploy digital technology to optimize the experience. And thirdly, we're going to have contact centers that have to be able to engage with their customer. And they're going to have to do that in a way that still leverages human contact, but does it in a sharper way. It does it in a way that values a customer. I think the risk is the contact centers that don't do that, the contact centers that just sit back and look to automate everything, they're going to be the contact centers that have the lowest employee engagement and the lowest net promoter score, or insert your customer experience metric there.
That's brilliant. And from what we're hearing from you, and not just from here, but before all this as well, is that, you know, it sounds like you're already forging that path towards that future as well. And yeah, I definitely agree with what you've spoken about. So Yeah, Jono, this is really great.
Yeah, well, Jono, I agree. It's a very exciting future that you've painted. And I wish you all the best in the work that you do. And thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks, guys. It's been fun.
You've been listening to The Calling, your guide to leading modern contact centres.
This podcast is produced by Callo, where art and science come together to turn interactions into experiences.
If you're interested in how Callo can help you, head to our website at calloconsulting.com.au.
The Calling was produced with strategy and production support from Wavelength Creative.
So you don't miss an episode of The Calling, don't forget to subscribe to or follow the show in your podcast app. And please leave a 5-star review. It really helps others find the show. I'm Sean McGinn.
And I'm Arnie Ho. And we'll catch you next time on The Calling.